Grab a chip and a chair. It's time for the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL. 92.5 FM, brought to you by the Best Bet Poker Rooms at Jacksonville and Orange Park. Now, the Best Bet Poker Show pals.
Happy Hump Day!
Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
Hump Day!
Yeah.
Hump Day!
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
hump
about.
Day.
The boss!
Woo-hoo!
Yeah!
Welcome to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDill here with Jesse the Boss. We got Jordan running the stream tonight and Country, of course, in the booth making all things happen for us nice and smooth this evening. What a great Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday. Why is it great? Does anybody want to ask me why my Wednesday was so great today?
Why was your Wednesday so great today,
Because
Allie?
I had an epic battle on the tennis court today.
Oh, nice one.
Epic battle.
I assume that this was a winning battle.
It is a win. Although, to be fair, I have had many battles where I have lost, but this was a battle to a win. And I was feeling so proud of myself that honestly, you know, it's like in any sport, right? I'll give you a comparison. So imagine that you are at the final table of the World Series of Poker, right?
Wait, hold on.
Everybody's already imagined this that plays poker, so like it's not difficult to jog your memory of what you imagine you're wearing, whether they're like your tighty whities and your wife beater chewing on a cigar, whatever that looks like.
Tighty whities and wife beater. That's not what I imagined I was wearing at the final table of the main event.
Right, but some people I'm certain have imagined that.
Probably.
So nonetheless, imagine that you have your rail and everybody's watching and it's really quiet and you're playing, you make an incredible play and the entire crowd erupts, right? They're on their feet, they're clapping, they're excited, they're cheering for you. There is no person in the world that could have made that play better than you did at that moment. That's how I felt today on the tennis court.
Well, that's
right.
That's awesome.
I was a beast at the net. So what happened? Put away the volleys. Actually, there was a lot of volleys actually happened to hit back to my opponent, but we're going to leave that out
right.
For now. Yeah, I was more impressed
with... It was a good day on the competitive clay.
It was a good day on the competitive field. And one of the things that made me want to mention that was, so we play, it's the best 2 out of 3, right? Best 2 out of 3. And we play 3 full sets. So we played the first one, we lost. And we lost 7-5, so it was very close. The second set, now in the first set, we were up by 3-0. And then we ended up tie all the way to the end. Okay? We lose the first set. Then in the second set, we are down 3-0. And then we never lost a game till we tied... we were down 4-0, excuse me. Then we tied at 4-all, and then we won one. And I did happen to tip the net on the game point of game 5. And then on game 6, I also tipped the net. So I sort of feel like it was a little...
Which is funny because you say that like it's a poor etiquette to tip
no,
the net.
No, it's what I call a dirty point. Like when
but
you
it's
win,
not like
you want to win
a...
with like a clean point, not like, oh, it hit the net and tipped over and nobody could do
right.
anything, right? It's not like a clean point. So, but
it's
nonetheless.
It's like a lucky ending is what you're saying.
Right, but it's a lot like poker in the regard, like, do you really care if the play that you made was spectacular? Or are you more concerned about scooping in the pot? And that's what made me think about that is like,
well, so, you know, that's actually a very good question.
It's a right. very good point, especially philosophically speaking, because depending on where you are, what game you're playing, what the position is, how much money is at stake, you might say, I feel better when I play better. But you also might just say, you know what? I don't care. I just won like a $30,000 pot, or maybe made a really crappy play at the end and heads up and you close out a tournament for like $1.5 million. Do you apologize? Do you say something? Because like in sports where you make a point where it's like you probably shouldn't have won the point, but you did.
Right.
People are like, oh, you know, they're like, oh, sorry. Oh, whoop, that's bad. But there isn't that type of etiquette in poker. And so
no,
I
think there is. I think that there is. I think if somebody, you know, they have a bad read, you know, say I put you on a hand that I have dominated. Mm-hmm. And so I play this heads up hand thinking that you have an underpair to my overpair. And it turns out you have an overpair to my underpair, right? Mm-hmm. And we turn our cards over. You got aces and I have, you know, whatever. You have two red aces, there's right, three like, diamonds like, on the board, and I have two black tens. So well, I have one out, right?
I was like, make it easy. Hearts. Yeah, that's I was it. Like, make it, I have aces and you have kings. Like,
but I made like, I made flop. A play at the pot, and you came over, and I you know, make what maybe is a bad play in the situation. Mm-hmm. I'm like, ah, dang it. And then, whoops.
It worked out.
There's the case 10. You're going to be happy with the victory, but you still might say, man, I got really
it's
lucky.
It's tough to it's win just, that way. Yeah. Like
got when, lucky, sorry. Bad play and worked out.
Yeah. I mean, there's just, not a time that you wouldn't rather lose that hand or lose that point or whatever the, you know, alternative
that's true.
Effect.
That's oh, very yeah. true. What Jordan said, you never want to lose.
No, of course.
You would rather get lucky and win than just play bad and lose.
Well, it's the of same course. Thing in any sport for football. You know, if you play terribly and you win the game, you still won.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, played bad.
No one's
going
to remember how you won a month from now.
So,
but you know what else?
That's a great point. Jordan, that's a huge point right there that you just said. Nobody's going to remember how you won. So I guess here's my question.
That's
my
true.
Question is like,
true.
Nobody's going to remember how you won. Do people remember how you lost? If you make a super, let's flip the conversation and let's say you make this outlandishly horrific call. Let's say you like call off on your stack and everybody's like, why are you putting your chips in there? But your mind was in this place where you're like, I felt I had a perfect read. I was zeroed right. in. Nobody knows except for you what you were thinking. And then you make that call. And then at the end, you're like, gosh, it was really terrible, but you win. Do you focus on the point that you won? Or do you say, yeah, it was really awful? And do people remember later how you lost versus how you won? Let's take Aflac, for example. Everybody knows who Matt Aflac is, or most people that have
people,
any involvement
right.
in the World Series of Poker or watch the World Series.
Right.
Because when he busted out of the main event at the final table, he literally cried. It brought tears to his eyes. So people remember that moment.
Right.
Had that not have been the case, nobody remembers what the guy had when they beat him.
No, somebody, he had aces. That's
I
all
know he
I know
has
right.
any idea what happened.
Aflac had aces and he lost.
Right. So that's a great point, yeah. Jordan. Like, do people only remember the losers, or maybe you never remember either one?
But, you know, the other philosophical point that you made is you might win a little pot off a horrible play. And, I mean, you always want to win, right? Like, mm-hmm. like I said, you'd always rather win the pot, but you might, like, feel bad.
Oh, sure. You feel bad in certain situations.
And not necessarily feel bad
like,
for the other person,
sorry.
But you might feel like, God, man, how did I play that so bad?
Or right? it's like when you draw out, no? right? Like, maybe you get all your chips in and you're drawing to, like, a three-outer, and then you hit the out and somebody's like, oh, sorry. Like,
right.
And you're like, I don't ever say that when I'm playing. I never apologize when I win a pot in poker. I think I did in the beginning, but now I'm just like, not apologizing. I'll take it every day.
I mean, sometimes I'll say, ooh, sorry, that was a dirty one. But
nasty. Caught up.
Oh, well, I'm stacking these chips.
I just get really quiet in those situations. I just
I do too. That's how I am. I'm
I just
like,
won't
whoop,
talk. I mean, you know, you got lucky and you got there in a bad way, but you'll take it. And I'm not going to talk about it. So just,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's Thanks. Just, I just think it's
interesting concept.
Because
pull...
you know the other guy doesn't want to hear about it, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
So. Absolutely. It's like,
yeah.
That's the thing. It's like better head down, quiet, just keep on moving. But there's a lot of things that are kind of happening in the poker industry that are challenges in these interesting places, right? Like we have the Chance Cornuth and the Phil Galfond challenge.
Yep.
And that challenge is, that's PLO strictly, right? Isn't it just PLO?
I think it is PLO, but
I think the Galfond challenge is only PLO. If I'm incorrect about that, somebody that's on Twitch watching or somebody do a little research and see if that's accurate or not. But I'm pretty certain that's how it is. So they play PLO there. But then we had this interesting rise up in the last like couple months since the pandemic.
Yes, it is PLO.
It is PLO.
Yeah.
So then you have Doug Polk and Daniel Negreanu, who are rivals for who knows how long and what caused it. Quite frankly, I don't care. I don't know that anybody else cares.
No.
But during the Heads Up Challenge and when the Galfond Challenge comes out and all of these other things that are happening, Doug Polk has challenged Negreanu to a Heads Up match. Now, Doug Polk, if you don't know, is one of, if not the best, Heads Up No Limit Hold'em player.
He's very good.
Right?
Yeah.
Negreanu is also one of the greatest No Limit Hold'em players. I don't know where he ranges as far as expertise and Heads Up, but as a whole, he is a tremendous No Limit Hold'em player. right?
Yeah, and I think the general consensus, even among Doug and Daniel, is that Doug should be a big favorite in this match as a heads-up, no-limit specialist against Nugranu, who's more of a ring game, all-around poker, but not necessarily heads-up specialist. Mm-hmm. But let's face it, we are playing heads-up hold'em. It's not like there's a massive edge to anybody once you are both good players.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that okay, so with you saying that, that brings me to my next question, which is, if that's the case and you have people that are wanting to play heads up, they're going head to head, right? And you have two of the greatest no limit hold'em players, and this is something they've probably done before in the past. So my question is, are they doing this? Is this like a chest beating thing? Is this testosterone? Is it bragging rights? Is it like my poker playing is better than your poker playing? So like
I don't really know.
What's
in the I think it's different with the Chance and the Phil Galfond.
Oh, that's different. That's a whole different thing. A lot of people are involved in that. That makes more sense. That's more like, hey, test your skills, Phil Galfond's spectacular and PLO,
right.
And he puts up these challenges which have a lot of parameters and many people can participate,
right?
But with the Doug Polk and
Daniel,
this is very different.
I don't really know why it happened. I think it is kind of a chest beating thing. They got into an argument and it was basically, you know, you used to hear this at the poker table all the time. You're playing at a poker table, somebody makes a play that's whatever, it's a bad play, it's a good play, who knows, and you know, they beat somebody a big pot and then they start, hey, man, you don't know what you're doing. That's a horrible play. And then this guy says, of course it's a good play. I knew you had this or that. They say, why don't we just play heads up? Go get a dealer. Let's play heads up. You think you're so good. I think that's what's happening here.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you guys a little bit of information because I know we didn't talk a lot about what the challenge in lies. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We also have the 1010XL main event that's coming up here October 28th. So what are we, about 2 weeks out? Is that exactly 2 weeks from today? So 2 weeks out, and if you're not familiar, you haven't joined us for that tournament.
3 weeks.
Excuse me,
today.
3 weeks. It's pretty spectacular. This is going to be a great tournament. This will be the second, well, I mean, really the first local tournament. You guys have the $1,500 buy-in tournament.
We have
the first major tournament.
We have the Fall Frenzy, which is really just a Fall Frenzy weekend. It's a $240 tournament followed by a $1,500 tournament followed by a $360 tournament.
So you have sort of a weekend tournament break that's happening right before the weekend before the 1010XL event. So
correct.
It's a lot of fun. $110 to get into this tournament. There's a lot of opportunities to win your way in. You can listen to the Best Bet Poker Show here from 6 to 7 on Wednesday nights. Also, we have a ticket that we'll give Prosser and Hicken to give away during their show. And, of course, we also have one to give away in the evening show for Frangie and Lauren. They'll give one away. So there's a lot of different opportunities for you guys to win. But $110 will get you in. It'll start exactly at 6 o'clock p.m. on the 28th. Frangie and Lauren will be live from the poker room, and then we will have our show immediately following. So we had a ticket to give away to that coming
up. And
that
1010XL tournament, remember, it starts at 6 p.m. Most of our tournaments start at 7. That one starts at 6.
And there's 5 bounties. So if you knock out any of those 1010XL personality, you'll get $110 back on the spot, and you are free rolling. So we're going to talk about that. Plus, we have some hands to pull apart and see what you guys think. What's the ROI? Would you stuff your stack in these spots, or would you fold? That and more. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You're listening to the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDill here with Jesse the Boss, Jordan running the stream, Country in the booth, taking care of us in here. So as promised, I have the 1010XL main event ticket. I'm going to give it out right now to the sixth caller, 641-1010, 641-1010, 641-1010, be the fifth caller right now, and you'll get yourself a 1010XL main event seat. Again, that tournament is on October 28th. It is a Wednesday. We will host the show live from the Best Bet Jacksonville location, which is at 201 Monument Road. we're going to hang out in there, and then there will be 5 bounties, all 10-10 XL staff, crew. Knock any of them out. You get your money back right on the spot. And then you'll play the tournament out. And generally, first place in this tournament has been somewhere fluctuating between 3 and 5,000, depending on the number of players. Boston, how many players do you think we'll get when you factor in the quarantine and your daily tournaments that you had for the price point? What are you suspecting? Like, how many players do you think we'll get?
For the 1010 XL event?
Yes.
Over 200.
You think we get like 250? That's always my numbers. Like,
I think we can hit 250.
We're gonna touch 3 on this one.
We might. It's going to be a big one. It's going to be a big one.
This might be the biggest, the largest 1010 XL field that we've ever had.
I wonder what the largest one has ever been.
260-something.
I think this will beat it. I
mean, really? We've been up to 260?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like, it was like 262 or...
Well, I think we hit the record then.
Yeah, I think we do too.
But it'll be interesting because people are really jonesing for tournament play. This is a specialty tournament. It's also a bounty tournament.
It's a lot of fun.
Plus, it's a fun one, yeah.
Yeah, it's so much fun. It's very different than any other normal poker tournament, right? Because you kind of go in, everybody's serious. They got their hoodies and their hat. Like, and they're just really not engaging. But this is a tournament where people come out, they have a couple beers, they eat some sushi or have a burger, whatever ails you. And then they hang out, right? And they just chit-chat with some of most. I feel like, honestly, here's what I hear during that event. All I hear is everybody trying to corner the gentleman from the studio asking them sports questions. They're like, well, who should I play this week in my fantasy? What do you think about this guy? Like, that's like, I feel like that's what happens.
That's funny.
So, it's a really
It is a good atmosphere
fun
for a tournament, though. Yeah, it's very fun. So if you're like new to tournaments, you've only played a couple, you want to play a bigger one.
Yeah.
This is a good, friendly, fun, vibe tournament.
You don't have to dedicate a ton of time. You know, it's not like a whole couple day thing. It's
single day.
One night. It'll take
A
while, but it's just still one night.
Yeah, one night still.
Yeah, but you don't have to worry about bagging chips and coming back. And so that's really nice. So you play and then you'll end. And I'll tell you what, let me tell you guys what the greatest Thursday morning hangover is. Being at the poker room all night and having to tell everybody in the card room that you're tired because you locked up 5K. That's like the best Thursday morning hangover, isn't it? Like, I'm tired because I won a bunch of money last night.
That's right.
So that's my story. I'm taking to it. Okay, so I want to circle back really quick to the Doug Polk and the Daniel Negreanu thing. And the reason that I want to ask you a question about this is, so we talk a little bit about them. What's the motivational drive for them to want to play heads up? So do you guys have like any, like, what is this about? Did somebody write a book?
I really don't know, other than, you know, the things we were talking about on break, which is probably just a little bit of chest pounding. And then
do you want to watch it? Like, do you have any desire to watch this match?
No. Yeah, not particularly.
That's what I think is interesting. Like, it's not going to drive. See, I feel like the Galfond Challenge, people want to watch.
But are they going to play?
That's exciting.
And I'm a little unclear about the Negreanu Polk thing. Are they going to play online or in person?
I think they're going to play online.
Yeah, that's what
my understanding is. They're going to play online.
Okay, they are going to play online.
Yeah.
And there is going to be a commentator, but Daniel is not going to show his whole cards.
What?
Wait, what? What does that mean?
He's not going to show his whole cards.
So
I don't know if Doug still
is. Doug showing his. I'm like, wait a minute.
Probably not. But if you look at the text thread, between Doug and Daniel, I think they agreed. It looks like they're going to start November 1st.
Okay.
I think in the range of 200, 400.
Yes, that's what I saw.
And it's unclear to me whether they're playing limit or no limit, to be honest with you. Obviously, limit goes more favor to Daniel. No limit, more favor to Doug. So maybe there's no limit. But Daniel will not show his whole cards.
Well, that's going to be a terrible watch. I mean,
right?
Yeah. What?
So again, I'm going to go back to my original question. So, Negreanu's not showing his whole cards. We don't know what Doug Polk's doing. It makes no sense to have this battle to begin with. And we have very few details. So is this just to drive up poker watching? Is this
I don't know. And like it's like you said, it's probably just, I mean, it's mostly a publicity stunt.
So they're not showing whole cards, and how do they even know, like, who's bet? You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, I guess you could just bluff him out of every hand, but it's, I mean,
there's no way for you to go back and collect the data.
Less
I'm like,
of,
how
it's
did
less
you play?
Of a way to tell who's better between the two, right?
Right.
That's what I'm saying is, like, I don't understand what the point is. So, like, is that the point? The point is to say who is better between the two players, because if that's the case, you're going to have Doug Polk who wins, and then everybody's going to say, we need a rematch because that's not a large enough sample size. So then they play again. Realistically, this could go on 100 times before somebody realizes who actually has the upper hand, because the sample size of hands that they're taking is not enough.
I mean, if the audience can't see the cards either, it's how is anybody going to know?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just a weird. It's kind of strange.
It is weird.
I don't know.
Yeah,
that's,
who knows?
That's my 411 on that. All right. So first of all, before we dive into a couple hands, I know we want to pull apart, because I saw one that was kind of interestingly posted by, it was posted to the Twitter family, and it's talked about, what do I do in this situation with this particular hand? And here's what's funny about it. It's a tournament style play, but the chips and the chip value and how many the chip sizes between each player plays so much into the factor, more so than any two cards in your hand. And I think that that's what makes the hand super interesting. So I want to talk about that. Bossman, I feel like you have a hand also for us. So let's do this. We'll dive into this when we got just enough time. We'll kind of lay the hand out, and then we'll see what happens. So you're playing. You're in a tournament, okay? And this picture, it's done in terms of blinds, so I'm going to give it to you in terms of that versus, like, the number of chips and what the blind structure is.
Okay.
So you're in the small blind, okay? You're in the small blind. You have ace-king offsuit.
Okay.
Okay, small blind, big blind. The
I'm
guy,
all in.
The guy. So you start the hand. You start the hand, and you have 31 bigs. Okay.
Definitely all in.
The guy in the big blind posts the big blind, and he has 13 bigs behind.
Okay.
This is very important. The guy under the gun opens. He makes a min raise, effectively. And he starts the hand with 100 big blinds. So effectively, he has the largest stack at the table.
Has the largest stack.
Okay. It folds around to the guy who is in the hijack position. He calls. So he flats the raise, which is 2.75 big blinds, two and three quarters big blinds.
I would just say 3x just for the math. It makes
okay,
it it's
so 3x. So it is, but when you get into other things, it actually makes a difference. But okay, we'll round. So 3x, and he has 9 big blinds behind. This is super important information, because you have a guy who flats in position, and he only leaves himself with 9 bigs.
Well,
seems fishy to me.
Yes and no. Depending on the average chip stack of everybody in the tournament, leaving yourself with 9 big blinds and wanting to see a flop with an opportunity to muck your hand if you miss is not a bad idea.
Okay.
Rather than going all in for the 12 bigs that he has.
Well, let me roll out the way that the table is, okay? So you have the guy who's the chip leader at the table. He has 100 bigs. You are next at the table in the small blind with 31 bigs, okay? The next person behind you is 25, then it goes to 20, and then it steadily decreases 14, 14, 9, and
okay.
9.
Okay, all right.
So that's important
so
information.
So that is important. So everybody's pretty shallow except for
the chip leader
the
and
chip
you.
Leader and you in the small blind. And to put this in perspective, we're talking about big blinds. You could consider this table being played at 500 and 1,000. And then just switch the number to he has 100,000, I have 31,000, other
right.
player has 12,000. Just
sure.
to put it into perspective in case you don't understand what we're talking about, number of bigs.
So,
So I don't think that it's that fishy, really, for somebody to call the 3 bigs there, or 2.7, whatever it is, 3 bigs, and leave themselves enough that he can still fold.
I mean, yeah, he calls off a quarter of it. He calls off a quarter of his stack.
Yeah.
And the reason that I think it's fishy is because he flats the chip leader who has 100 bigs. Like, what are you doing there? Like, you don't want to get involved with the chip leader unless you have a big hand. So I feel like his hand is either gigantic or he's just totally playing like a simp.
See, I kind of think the other way. I think he has something like a small pair.
Yeah.
Right, but he's not going to call if, like, I feel like if somebody raises over the top, like, here's my problem.
Well, yeah, okay? If somebody raises over the top, then you got to get out.
We're not going to be able to get through the whole hand before the break, so let me run out what happens, and I'll tell you what I'm thinking, and then we'll come back and tell you what happens post-flop. So you're in the small blind with 31 big blinds, okay? The big blinds posted, he has 14 big blinds. The guy under the gun who has 100 big blinds, he opens for a min raise. He makes it, yeah, or 3X. He makes it three bigs. It gets folded to the guy who's in the cutoff position. Right. He flats, okay, and he leaves himself with 9 big blinds behind. You have a player who folds, the cutoff falls. So then you have the now, button player who now...
Oh, there's more.
We're not done. The button player who now shoves for 14 plus, a little over 14 big blinds. So he goes from 3 big blinds to 14 big blinds on the button, okay? Now it's back to you. Remember, you have 30 big blinds. You're in for one big blind. It's going to cost you 14 bigs to call, okay? And you have 3 players behind you to act and 1 who is all in. Now, I'm going to give you the mathematics of what everybody has. And then when we come back, let's see what you come up with. So remember, small blind, you got 31 bigs. Big blind has 14 bigs. The original raiser, who's the chip leader, has 100 bigs. Then you have a guy who flats, who leaves 9 big blinds behind. And then a guy on the button who shoves for 14 big blinds. Everybody almost has the same chip stack with the exception of you and the chip leader. Now you...
And how many players are at this table?
There are 3, 6, 7 players at the table.
7 players.
7 active players.
Are we in
the
money or at the money or in the bubble or anything like that?
You have no other information. You don't know anything about the players. You have no other information. This is just a straightforward hand. Like, what would you do in this spot?
Right, but are we at the final table? Are there ICM implications?
You don't have any other information, so the answer is no. You don't know.
I mean, you have to have information about that.
You don't know about the players. You're not in the money. No, even if you don't know. Nothing else matters. Nothing else matters. You're not in the money. You don't know anything about the players. It's the first hand of the tournament.
Because it makes.
You know no other information.
All right, so you're not in the money here.
You're not in the money. You don't know anything else.
Okay, because it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, it does.
Right, but you don't have any info.
Well, you know whether you're in the money or not.
You're not in the money.
Right? I'm going to know sitting there whether I'm in the money or not.
Okay, I'll tell you one more time. You're not in the money. Okay. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will figure out what you're supposed to do if it's the best idea. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDill here with Jesse the Boss, Jordan and Country. All right, if you are just joining us, we have been chatting a little bit about a hand that was posted online, and I feel like at first glance when you listen to it, it's sort of like, this is such an easy hand. Why is there so much conversation? But when you really start to actually pull the hand apart, I think it's a bit deceiving. So we have ace-king. We're in the small blind. We're playing tournament-style poker. We have 31 big blinds to start the hand. The guy in the big blind has 14 big blinds under the gun. Has 100 big blinds. He opens and makes it 3. He raises 3X. You have somebody who flats from the cutoff, and he leaves himself with 9 big blinds behind. The guy from the button now shoves for just under 15 big blinds, and it's on you. Now, remember, you are facing an all-in bet. It's going to cost you 14 big blinds to call, which is effectively half of your stack, and there are 3 people behind you to call. So you're at a position with ace-king, right? You have a fairly sizable stack to fend, and you have to worry about the small blind or the big blind who hasn't done anything. The guy who's under the gun, who is the chip leader at the table, substantially the chip leader at the table, and he open raised. And then you have to worry about the other guy who flatted in a weird way and only left himself 9 big blinds. So what do you do when a guy goes all in for 14 bigs?
Here's a couple things to think about, right? The guy raised under the gun, so could he have a big hand? Absolutely. Everybody's stack is pretty shallow.
Mm-hmm.
So 31 bigs is a lot in this situation. And now we're assuming we're not at the final table or anything. There's no money involved, so there's a lot of people left in the tournament, and somehow we just got moved to this table and don't know anything about anybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in that respect, this tournament is playing very shallow. So the 31 big blinds is a very big stack. And maybe you don't need to just put it all in here and go for it. However, my first the guy.
So you think you should flat?
No, never flat.
Why?
I would never flat.
Why?
Here, ever. Because I don't want to. I don't want to put in half my stack and then play the hand out of position with an ace king.
Carry on.
So I would never flat. 100% of the time, it's either a fold or a raise.
Mm-hmm.
It does matter. It is three bet to you with ace king, which is player dependent. If you know stuff about people, sometimes that's an easy fold. In a tournament, however, see, I think that the guy that limped for three bigs with only nine behind, I'm more likely putting him on a hand that he kind of wants to see a flop with and may want to get away from. So a pair of sixes or under, or maybe some suited connectors, 9-10, 10-jack, jack-queen, something like that. So I'm not really too worried about him. He's going to make his decision. He's either going to call or he's going to fold or whatever, but he doesn't have aces, kings, or queens, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, you have two blockers. You have an ace and a king. So, like, the likelihood of him having aces or kings is pretty slim.
So I don't put him on aces, kings, or queens. So, therefore, I'm not really worried about him because I do have ace, king.
Right.
I am, and I'm not worried about the big blind because we can't just be worried about everybody just because I have two cards.
Yeah, of course. He's a nobody. He's a peon in the,
right. If he wakes up with a hand, oh well.
Yeah, that's the way it goes.
The guy that came in for three bigs could easily have a big hand, but will he call 31,000? He's not going
to call 30 bigs. Yeah.
Will he call 30 bigs? Mm-hmm. He's not going to call 30 bigs unless he does have aces, kings, or queens.
Okay.
Right? He's not going to call risk a third of the stack. So with jacks or tens. So if you shove there, more than likely you're going to get the initial raiser out. The guy with that started with 12 big blinds is either going to say he's probably going to fold because it seems like that is his intent. Or he might now say, I'm going to get 3-1. Let's go for it. But you still have ace king. And then the guy obviously is all in for the 14 bigs.
Mm-hmm.
And so since you shoved all in, now you're going to get half your stack back and you're going to run it with ace king against two players or one player, more than likely.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think there's a case for folding just because it's three bet to you. And in this case, it looks like the tournament's playing really shallow and 31 bigs is a lot. So you still have a lot to work with. But I keep going back and forth, and I think I like the shove as a better play here.
Yes.
Now, I will say this. If we're really deep in a tournament and there's some ICM implications and everybody's shallow, there's a lot of reasons to fold this hand.
Mm-hmm.
However, all that being equal, you just got moved to this table. Tournament's just playing shallow. Let's get all the chips. Stuff it.
Okay. So here's what's funny about this. This is fully what I had anticipated and expected that you would say. Here's the other thing. This is what I think most people would say, right? And this is probably what I also would have said. But as I looked at this, because I thought it's just entirely too easy, why is this something that people are talking about? There's something that's being missed. And here's what I think that it is. And again, this is just my opinion. But if you look at the way that this plays out, okay, the guy who has 100 big blinds, if you flat with ace-king, he's calling 100% of the time. Like, he's not going to not call when he opens and he has a guy who's all, like, it just doesn't make sense. So I feel like calling there is a suicide mission.
Yeah, I'm calling
never,
is not an option.
Ever no. doing that. So I could find a fold. And at first I was like, oh, I could find a fold. There's too many people behind. And I don't like the part where the guy's, like, putting in three bigs and leaving himself nine. I was like, that's fishy. And the guy who's the chip leader,
fishy,
that could be problematic.
Eh.
But here's what I came to after looking at this. Okay, your options are to fold or go all in. If you go all in, here's what I see happening, okay? The guy in the big blind, if he has any form of a half marginal hand that's on the close to the top tiers of his hands. If he has, like, basically ace-king, ace-jack, ace-queen, ace-10, two nines, two tens, two jacks, like maybe even two eights. He can find a call. And here's why, the guy in the big blind. Because he has 13 big blinds left. You're not in the money. And he is getting max value against three players. So I feel like he can find a call with a lot of hands. That's the first piece.
Maybe. I mean,
the second piece is
sure.
The guy who opened, who has 100 big blinds, he is literally, when he sees two people involved in this, he is checking himself out of the pot unless he has aces or kings. He's not getting involved.
I agree.
He's like, yep, I'm out because sure. This is an opportunity where three or four people can bust
each other out.
They get, like, I don't need to be involved in this. I don't need to shift the chip lead. So we're just going to take him out of the equation. So now you say, all right, the guy who open raised initially when I shove for 30, he's going to fold. We might pick up the big blind. Maybe. If we pick him up, okay. Who we are going to pick up is going to be the guy who flatted the three big blinds and left himself nine. In no way, shape, or form in any universe of somebody who has any inclination of how to play poker do I ever believe they are flatting from late position with for a 3x raise and folding for nine more bigs when there are a minimum of two players in the pot and you are looking to triple up at the very least.
Well, I will say this about that guy. I will say this about that guy that limped for three.
Worst player ever.
If he doesn't have aces, it's a horrible play.
Or if he doesn't have a hand that he can put chips in with, right? Like, I feel like
he just can't. So, I mean, I kind of disagree. Again, I think he's going to fold there.
Again, I don't think there are many hands that he can have where he can flat the 3X raise, which is why he is a concern to me when I'm playing this hand out. So I look at it in terms of this. The guy in the big blind might find a call if I shove because he's only risking 14 bigs, right? Keep in mind, like, if I fold, the guy in the big blind might call, depending on what his cards are. So it's almost the same thing, effectively, if you remove me from the conversation. And
I don't necessarily agree with that either. I think the big blind is going to play much tighter than you think.
He might. All I'm saying is it's possible. The guy that flatted the three bigs, he's calling 100%. I'm never
he's
taking
not
him
calling
out of the
100%,
pot. I just think he's calling very frequently.
He's going to call 90%. Frequently, but
it's a lot.
Not even.
So we take that. You take the guy who's all in for 11 bigs, and then you take the guy who's all in for 14 bigs. You overshove for 30. Here's the piece that I think people forgot to calculate and look at. You have a guy who's all in for 11. You have him covered. So does the other guy who initially shoved. So really what that means is he's all in for 15 big blind or 14 big blinds. You are playing a side pot for three big blinds against one player no matter what.
Yeah, which is great.
Because the other guy is out. So when you think about that, you're reducing your variance substantially. So you go from 14 big blinds down to 11 big blinds. You're not going to fold ace-king to play against 11 big blinds. Here's the other piece of that that I feel like people forget. If you look and consider the fact that the big blind could call, right, and we're just taking him. If the big blind puts any chips in, you also have him out chipped, which gives you three additional big blinds that you could potentially win.
Sure.
So in that situation, you are playing with ace king all in, no more betting. Remember, that's it. We're running it out. So you are putting in six big blinds to effectively run it against two people with ace king. And when you think about it like that, I feel like you're supposed to call 100% of the time. Like, I don't think you can
raise.
You're supposed to go all in 100%. I don't think you can ever find a spot where you fold. And I guess that's the biggest point. It's
when you look
at the other money that's going to be on the side and you look at, because like at first you're like, I'm not going to run ace king through four people, but you're not.
Right.
You have more chips, so you only have to run it through the one guy. Because that guy
that drops your variance
that
down.
That one guy is changing your variance so much that you're never not going to call a 6X raise all in preflop with ace king ever. So I think in that, like when you look at it like that, your answer is decided.
And I didn't even think about the extra money, the side pot implications, which is a very good point that you are running the side pot against one or potentially just two guys, not everybody. And so that is a good point. Somebody in Twitch said, he says calling is effectively the same thing as raising.
No, calling is effectively the same thing as just, that's calling's the worst. No,
but right, but let me explain. But it's not because if you call, the guy with 100K might consider calling.
He also might consider squeezing, and then you're in a really bad spot.
Right. Well, he can't squeeze. Nobody has any more money.
You have more money. Right. You could fold. So he might push you out. Like if he raises and then you flat and then, or like let's say you flat and then the guy, like, I don't know. Like if there's a weird spot, like it's not good.
You can't fold after you flat anyway. So if you can't fold after you flat anyway, which you can't, then.
It's not. Yeah. I mean, he can't raise the guy, but on your left.
All in is the correct play.
Yeah. I think
pro play, move all in.
I think the pro play is move all in. And I agree. The more and I looked at the side pot implications and how much you can actually win on the side pot versus racing against the other guy, you're really only playing post-flop poker against one or potentially two people.
Right.
And that variance being lowered between two and five big blinds when you're talking about 14, you're lowering your variance by 50% almost. That is substantial.
So do we know what happened?
Yes,
is it a real thing?
We don't know what happened.
Oh, we don't know what happened?
We don't know what happened. That's it. I don't know what happened. I mean, well, actually, hold on, time out. We know what happened. We don't know what the right answer is.
Oh.
So, like, right? Like, what's the best thing to do?
Well, I mean, I think we figured out the right
what
answer.
What does the guy do? The guy goes all in.
He goes all in.
He goes all in.
Did he win the pot?
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know how it played out?
I can't tell you.
I want to know.
He wins the pot.
Ace King wins the pot.
Winner!
Scooped everything.
Everybody's like, God, you're killing me. Tell me the answer. Nothing.
Yeah, no, you know what you're supposed to say is he goes all in.
He goes all in and he
the
loses.
Under the gun raiser snap calls with aces. Yeah. The other guy who went on who limped had kings snap calls. The other guy had the other ace king or no, something like that, but he wins with a flush.
Flush, draw you.
One card flush.
And then he says, sorry, bad play, but I got there, so give me the chips.
It's the other guy you race against ace king and you guys are tied and then he flushes out with the ace on the end. Yeah. Oof. That's the worst story.
I hate that.
All right, we need to take our final break, but when we come back, we'll talk all things promotions and put a wrap on the show. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDeal here with Jesse the Boss, Jordan running the stream, and Country in the booth, keeping us all in line. All right, we have lots of things going on in the poker room. Obviously, things are full, steady, full force, tons of promotions, lots of things happening, daily promotions in both locations. The Trick or Treat High Hands are taking place. In fact, tonight from 7 p.m., so in just about 4 minutes from now, the promotion will start and run all the way until midnight. You could be at either the Best Bet Jacksonville location off of Monument Road, or you can be over in the Orange Park location. You are eligible at both properties. The high hand winner between 7 and midnight. If you're the high hand winner, you get $800.
Right, yeah. High hand of the hour. Between 7 and 11.
Excuse me. Yep. So from 7 to 8, high hand winner of that hour.
Right.
You can either take the $800 or you can gamble. Ring. You can try to trick and see if you can spin up to the $2,000 spot. Now, if you guys joined us on the show last week, I will tell you that we were joined by Jimmy Lyons, who happens to be a data statistics and analysis teacher, who said to everybody, the best thing to do is always spin. You have a greater chance of earning more than $800 on that wheel if you spin. So if you're listening to the show, thank me later.
That's right. The math is always right.
The math is always right. Always on Wednesday nights, there is a nice live stream cash game. No limit hold'em, 2-2 game tonight. Buy-in is between $1 and $500. That will kick off right here at 7 o'clock p.m. immediately following the show. I know the game is full tonight, but if you want to get in on that action, just email sagec@bestbetjacks.com. S-A-I-G-E-C at bestbetjacks.com. There's also live stream games Thursday and Friday. For all other information, you can go to bestbetjacks.com. That's going to do it for us tonight, but don't go anywhere. End of the night with Rick Ballew is coming up next. For Jesse the Boss, Jordan and Country, I'm Allie McDeal saying, until next time, we hope to see you at the final table. Raise it, baby, stay with me.
I love it. Love game.